So everyone, I have a article that's coming out soon. Okay. So this is a shout out to Brian Driscoll. Okay. Shout out to Brian Driscoll because he asked me to add this segment to the podcast today. And I decided to turn it not only into the podcast, but also into an article. So this article is going to be at irishbreakdown.com later today. I wanted to think back to my first day at IB, which was in January of 2022 officially. Okay. I technically been started working there already a couple of weeks in advance, but I wanted to think back to the state of recruiting at that time, because if you remember, that's right after Brian Kelly left LSU. Marcus Freeman gets elevated to head coach. And quickly we started getting signs of some things that Marcus Freeman was going to do differently. So I wanted to write an article and do this segment on a few changes that Marcus Freeman has made in the recruiting side that I believe were needed and I believe have really stood firm the test of what is going to matter most for Notre Dame recruiting. So I want to work through that list. And then the last section, because again, we can't just be sunshine and rainbows all the time. There is a big issue that I wanted to talk about at the end. And we'll have the conversation of hopefully Notre Dame changes this. And hopefully Notre Dame improves upon this. But it's more wishful thinking, I guess, right? So let's start with, and I think that this is most important. This is because this is an ideology. This isn't a strategy thing. This isn't a let's attack this state more. Let's attack that state more. This is more an ideology of what Marcus Freeman wanted to do the minute that he got to campus. Okay. And this actually, we actually started to see this when he was just a defensive coordinator, set really kind of creating his defensive roster in his image. And this is parlayed into what we have seen on the roster, I believe, from a recruiting perspective in a lot of areas. There has been an emphasis: get longer, get more athletic. Get longer, get more athletic. Why do we want to do those things? Always ask yourself this. When we hear about an ideology or a strategy, why does Notre Dame want to do that? Why does any team want to do that? Why does a coach want to do that? Why do you want to get longer and more athletic? Probably for most people, you're thinking, why wouldn't you? But you have to ask yourself, why is that the vision? Why was that the initiative? Because in this era of space, playing in space, tackling in space, making plays after the catch, throwing to space. I mean, all those things involved, covering out in space. You need long, athletic players because of why? Because the margin for error gets so much smaller. So much smaller. Windows close like that. Timing is become essential because everyone is so much longer and more explosive and more athletic than they once were. And in this world where you're defending against these spread offenses defensively, or you're offensively trying to create space against these more explosive second level defenders, you need to evaluate, create, and manipulate space. So Marcus Freeman from day one was like, I need to get longer. I need to get more explosive. I need to get more athletic. That length that we talk about too is also great for developing and transitioning. How is a guy as a 6'5", 265, 270-pound defensive end, those guys have a upside developmentally to maybe eventually turn into a playmaking three technique, or a lightly built tackle develop into a guard, or a line, or a defensive end to a actually, I already said that one. Defensive end, defensive tackle, corner to safety. Developmentally, it gives you a different track, and that improves your overall team athleticism all over the place.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
And there has been so many examples of that throughout Marcus Freeman's tenure. We can obviously talk at linebacker because that's the easiest one because that's the position he played, position he coached, and he was a defensive coordinator for Notre Dame in 2021. So you can talk about Drake Bowen. You could talk about Jaden Osbury. You could talk about Preston Zinter. You could talk about Bodie Cahoon, you talk about Kingston Viliamuasi, you talk about Teddy Rezac, you can talk about 2025 and the class that he's, that they have put together and continuing to put together with Anthony Sack and Josiah Key and potential of Nathaniel Wusubotang and potential of Madden Foraimo. But also, you can even go back to the 2022 class. Jalen Snead, Joshua Burnham, Nolan Ziegler, Junior Toilamaka, and even the guys that don't end up panning out, you still took swings at guys that are longer and more athletic. And that was easy to see at linebacker very early on. You're like, wow, that linebacker class, it looks a little bit different than what Notre Dame's been getting. Because again, all due respect, and I truly mean that, because I know it can come off very negative sometimes, but Drew White, good player. J.D. Bertrand, very good linebacker. Jack Kaiser, rock solid, coming back in 2024. But the initiative is to be better than that, right? You're not recruiting to get J.D. Bertrand and Jack Kaiser every year. You're recruiting to get bigger, faster, stronger every single year. Every single year. You want to get better. It's like parenthood, right? You don't want your kids to have worse than what you had or the same as what you had. You want them to have better. So you shoot for better. And Notre Dame has been shooting for better. They have been. The athleticism. Detroit, you're too funny, man. They have vines for arms, man. Vines for arms. Lake for days. His hands almost touch the floor. Those vines. There you go. You got it. But we can see it at linebacker very early on. The next initiative, which I, and this, again, this is all about getting longer and more athletic. Cornerback. That was paramount for Notre Dame. Paramount. And obviously that goes to Mike Mickens and what he has established at corner, but also what did Marcus Freeman have when he was at Cincinnati? He had long athletic corners. He had Ahmad Sauce Gardner. He had Kobe Bryant. He had some really good corners. And I think that is what he strived for. Benjamin Morrison, the transition from Cam Hart to wide receiver to corner and the ascension of that. Leonard Moore, Carson Hobbs, Dallas Golden, Mark Zachary, Cree Thomas, it's a lot of length, guys. A lot of length. That's a lot of big-time corners, right? You got longer there. You got more athletic there. Safety. Don Schuller, Bronte Johnson, Jaydon Blair. Like, you have gotten some length and athleticism at safety, which needs to continue to be bolstered moving forward. Defensive line-wise, even though, and we'll talk about defensive line recruiting a little bit more in depth later, but despite the headache that it is sometimes, you have gotten a lot of guys that have high upside and length. Brennan Vernon, Armel Mookum, Christopher Burgess, Boubacar Traore, a lot of guys with Matt Logan Thomas, even though he's a lightly built guy, he's got very long arms and athleticism. That is for a reason. When that split, we've seen this. We have seen this. Think about Caleb Williams 2 years ago, not this past year. We kicked his butt 2 years ago. How many times did we have Caleb Williams dead to rights? And all of a sudden he breaks out of the pocket. We're just an arm, which is an inch too short. Arm length too short. Just aren't able to finish a play. Think about Alabama 2020. How many close plays there were. Because yes, we're going to always hyper-focus on Najee Harris hurdling over Nick McLeod, or Devontae Smith making a play in space, or Mac Jones sidestepping out of a pressure and finishing a play. The difference there is you weren't long enough and you weren't athletic enough to finish those plays. You need to be better there. Because in all of those plays, Notre Dame was in bad position for any one of them. Not one of them. Devontae Smith on those bubble screams. Sean Crawford's right there. He's right there. You, as a coach, you put him in the right spot. Unfortunately, he just wasn't the right athlete to be in that spot. Different. Nick McLeod had Najee Harris. He's there. He's dead. Nick McLeod wasn't good enough to be in that spot. Wasn't a good enough player. I don't even know what defensive end missed Mac Jones on that stupid spin out that finished their first down. That is the difference here. Because we're going to hyper-focus and we're going to talk forever about quarterback play and offensive output. Sure, but there are still plays defensively that you weren't able to finish. Weren't able to finish the play. Offensively, it's the same thing, man. How many plays over the years has it just been like Notre Dame is a step short there? They didn't get to the hole quick enough. I know you guys are going to make a lot of jokes. Ha ha ha. That's what she said. Whatever. Cool. But the split second, that half a step, it makes a difference, man. It is super cliche to say football is a game of inches, but it is. It is. That's why on defense, you've gotten longer. That's why on offense, Charles Jagasaw, Owen Strebig, Gerby Lamberts, the tight ends you've gotten, Cooper Flanagan. Now you got James Flanagan. Wide receiver, Micah Gilberts, Cam Williams. You have tried to get more explosive, more athletic, and longer. The running backs you've gotten. That will matter in a game that is decided by the smallest of margins. They'll matter. And you'll notice it when it matters. You'll notice it. I promise. The Ohio State game. Stupid screen at the end that we hated, right? Should have gave Aldrich the ball. There's no doubt that you should have gave Aldrich the ball. But you know what? You were about an inch away from completing that pass and probably winning that football game. The screen that JT Toilamolau knocked down. You complete that, you probably win the game. The inches won the game. Unfortunately, it wasn't on Notre Dame's side, though. It wasn't on Notre Dame's side. So we can joke about it. And I know it's in playful humor. And you know me, I'm a goofball. I can joke. I'm good with that. Sarcasm, I'm good with that. But in all seriousness for a second, that is going to be the differentiator between Notre Dame being a great team, being a good team, or being somewhere in between. Or somewhere lower. Few missed interceptions too. Absolutely. Absolutely. It really does make a difference. It really does. There, those couple key plays, a batted ball, missed window, fingertip, knocking down a pass, one half step too short on a rush around the arc. All those things really added up to losing games. Notre Dame needs more of that. And I think that that has been a big initiative for Coach Marcus Freeman during his time at Notre Dame. You might disagree with some of the players they pushed with. You might disagree with cooling on a kid. You might disagree just with the strategy in general. But I think whether you, one common ground we can find is that they've never just tried. Notre Dame's recruiting sucks for the last 36 years. Wow, that is a heck of a statement there. And that person's gone. That might be the last pancake you guys get for me in this chat, by the way. That might be it. Last time I blocked somebody. There we go. So that's one big thing that I think Marcus Freeman has changed drastically. Now let's talk about some of the areas that he has changed drastically as well. I want to talk about one that I think meant. I think the one that made the most sense very quickly is the presence in Texas. I have said this stat a lot on this show, so I do not want to just kind of rehash it too much, okay? But Brian Kelly's last five recruiting classes, he had three players from the state of Texas in 5 years. Marcus Freeman in his first recruiting class in 2023 had four players from the state of Texas in one class. I don't know why, and I'm actually not throwing shade at Brian Kelly. As you guys know, I have no problem throwing shade at Brian Kelly. Zero problem with that at all. But for whatever reason, Brian Kelly ignored Texas for the last few years of his tenure. It wasn't a place that he wanted to. And I think that is one of the most... I just don't understand it. I just don't. Because if I asked you all, what are some of the best developers of talent from a state-to-state perspective, Texas would probably be number one by 90% of you. So there'll be some Floridas thrown in there. There'll be some Californias, maybe a Georgia. Like, there'll be some others, I'm sure. Not everybody. I don't think it'll be 100% hit rate on Texas being number one. But the historical data, the names that you've come see out of the state of Texas. I mean, there is just so many great football players that come, and it's on a surplus too, guys. It's not like there's 30 good players out of state of Texas. Like, there's some years where like the number 100th player in the country in the state of Texas is a dude, like a really good football player. You can find so much talent in the states. And again, for whatever reason, Notre Dame went away from that for a few years. You got four now in 2023. You got three in 2024 as well. And then 2025, you have an opportunity to only get one. But if you look at 2026, I think that Notre Dame is going to really pick that back up in the Lone Star State. Like, I think they're going to have some big traction in the state of Texas. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a three or a four commits total in the 2026 class from the state of Texas. And that's how it always should be. There's so much talent, and there's a surplus of talent. Go find it. Not every player from the state of Texas is going to go be a Longhorn. Not every one of them is going to go Texas A&M. Not everyone is going to go to TCU, whatever. Like, all the really good schools in Texas. Notre Dame needs to be able to go into Texas consistently and get good football players. And they have so far. I mean, your leading receiver in 2024, might be a guy from Texas. Your leading rusher, potentially. I mean, I'm more of a Jeremiah Love leading rusher guy, but Jadarian Price is from Texas. Leonard Moore has a chance to come in and play. Kedron Young looks like the next stud at running back after Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price leave. Like, Texas should be huge for you if you're Notre Dame. Should be huge. It hasn't been, for whatever reason, the last few years. But it's changing. It's changing. The 2026 class, I think, will continue to be a step in the right direction. you have, and so here was the stat that if I remember correctly. So the last 10 years under Brian Kelly, the first five of that 10. So if we cut it into two segments, the first 5 years of his last 10, he had seven players from the state of Texas. The last five, only three. Notre Dame. So that means 10 players in a 10-year span from the state of Texas. Okay. 10 players in 10 years from Texas. Notre Dame in 2 years to start Marcus Freeman's tenure had seven in 2 years. They'll have eight if they get to new kinds. And then I think of 2026, they'll be over that 10. So in a 4-year span, Notre Dame is going to do more in the state of Texas than what I think they did the previous 10 years under Brian Kelly. That's a stat, man. That is a stat. I don't know why there was depreciated value in the state of Texas under Brian Kelly, but Marcus Freeman has certainly shown that he wants to get that back. Next one I want to talk about. There has to be, and because I'm not going to bore you with the keep the good players home. That should be essential for every football team, right? Like the University of Texas should keep the best players in Texas at Texas. That should be their goal. Notre Dame should be keep the best player in Indiana and Illinois at home. That should be a goal. Sure. All those things should be true. Georgia should keep Georgia kids at home. That's their goal at hand. I shouldn't have to announce that. That should be an expected thing. One thing, though, that has been been a crux for Notre Dame is their continued presence in the Southeast was just not good enough. Just didn't get enough good players out of Southeast. And it doesn't even come down to going into Southeast and getting some of the best players from the Catholic schools in the South. No, it is the ideology, and maybe this should have been the first point, but the ideology of what fits at Notre Dame, I think, has changed so drastically. So drastically. It's not anymore Catholic schools from this area. They are now dipping into the Southeast for kids that are from public schools, which is just not a traditional Notre Dame route. And this isn't even a Brian Kelly thing. This is like a pretty just recent history of Notre Dame. They just haven't dipped as much into this pipeline. But now when you look at the 2025 class, I want to use this class as an example. This is the best one because Notre Dame has done such a good job in the Southeast, even with, you know, the pending decommitment flip or whatever of Ivan Taylor. You still have a quarterback, Deuce Knight, who is a potential five-star in the 2025 class out of George County in the state of Mississippi, a public school in Mississippi. Notre Dame, when Deuce Knight signs with Notre Dame, he would only be the second player from the state of Mississippi to sign with Notre Dame in 28 years. 28 years. And it's a public school kid from Mississippi. And Jeremiah, I agree completely. North Carolina is I know it's not the deep South, but like so the Carolinas still South. Like, yeah, I think that is included, obviously, in this conversation. I actually have that written down here. We'll get to that. Not only do you have Deuce Knight, though, Dallas Golden. Now, Dallas Golden goes to a school that you should tap into more. Like, they should just do better in Berkeley Prep, like, just flat out. But you got Davion Dixon, who's now in a public school in Miami Palmetto. You have Justin Thurman in the class. You also just got, and because this is what I was just talking about to you, Jeremiah, you got Jadon Blair out of North Carolina, which, again, North Carolina's not the deep South, but still a spot that is traditionally SEC-oriented, right? At least ACC-oriented, but SEC, absolutely. You get Jadon Blair, 6'4", 190 pounds, five-star upside safety out of North Carolina. You talk about what you did in the 2024 class out of North Carolina. Went down, you got Bryce Young, should have. Oh, is that what he meant? Well, Notre Dame's doing pretty well without it, so we'll see. Gotcha. Thank you, though, Archer. I did misread that. I thought he was talking about North Carolina. Man, I'm talking about states, and you're talking about national championships. We'll talk about both. We'll talk about both here. You also have Daniel Anderson out of Arkansas. You also have Jerome Bettis Jr. out of Georgia. But again, if we're talking about North Carolina, if I include this into the South conversation, Jadon Blair, obviously, in this class. But 2024, you also got Jack Larson. You also got Micah Gilbert, Bryce Young. So you're tapping into the Carolinas a little bit more now as well. Big piece of the puzzle. Agreed, Jeremiah. I think we see that one very similarly. It's the same conversation, though. It all goes around the same conversation that I just had with Texas. Where did the best talent come out of? Texas, Southeast, right? Whether you want to say it's Florida, whether you want to say it's Georgia, Alabama, whatever, Southeast produces a lot of great football players. Notre Dame needs to tap into that pipeline more. They need to tap into that area more. And they are. 2025, I think, has been a big representation of that. Notre Dame needs to continue that. You need to go into 2026 and have the same type of impact that needs to happen. Yeah. David Sanders is good, by the way, Archer. He's good. I would like Notre Dame to get the number one player in North Carolina in 2026. I don't know if that's necessarily reasonable, but that would be my deeper wish for Notre Dame game, for my own game. Impact Southeast. Impact the Southeast. That is what I need Notre Dame to do. And then the other thing, before I get into the negative conversation, okay? it's a pretty negative conversation. Hopefully Sean's back by then, because then we'll have a deeper conversation about this. I know you want to talk about this one. Quarterback recruiting is the next one. Quarterback recruiting. Guys, you know that I'm a Notre Dame fan at heart, okay? And yes, I'm an analyst. Yes, I'm going to analyze fairly and not spin, but also I'm a fan, right? I'm a fan. And I have suffered the same ways you have suffered with quarterback play over the last several years. I've suffered. All due respect. I know, very negative, but it is what it is. Drew Pine wasn't good enough. That wasn't a good enough option to have in the quarterback room in case someone got hurt. Brandon Clark wasn't good enough. So many quarterbacks that I have watched come into a football game. All right, here. This is going to come off negative, but it's fine. Tommy Rees wasn't good enough. The options that you have had over the last X amount of years at Notre Dame have not been good enough. It should not have been, if Tyler Buchner isn't good or he's hurt, then you're up, you know what, creek. Like, it just should not have been to that point. And it was. It was. Notre Dame had done some good things in the 2010s at the quarterback position. You had talent there. You had talent there. The player, Irish for life. I'm talking about the player. No. Yeah. No, I'm talking about Kendre Harrison, Archer. Yeah. No, not Faison Brandt. He's very good, but yeah, Notre Dame already has their quarterback. So, yeah, Kendre Henderson is who I was talking about. Or Harrison. Kendre Harrison, not Henderson. Harrison. Very, very good football player. Quarterback has just been a spot that has just been so frustrating. Because, yes, there's been lack of development, but also, guys, there's been lack of good recruiting at quarterback for several years. There has been consistency, I should say. There was a time where Tyler Buchner gets hurt. You have Drew Pine and a freshman quarterback in Steve Angeli. That's your options. And that is an issue. That's a problem. Now I look at 2025. And again, this is 2023 class, 2024 class, 2025 class, including, and you could throw 2026 in there as well. But I'm giving you the hypothetical of 2025 recruiting, what the season. You could go into a season, potentially, not likely, because, you know, someone's going to transfer, all that type of stuff. We'll save that for a different conversation, though. You're going to look around at 2025. Yes, Brian, Pine was never supposed to see the field, but he was the backup quarterback. That's the point. That was your only option after someone gets hurt. He was your only option. You could say, oh, he was only supposed to be the backup. He was still the backup. That's the point. Drew Pine level talent should never be the backup. That was the point. That's the point. Now I'm looking at 2025, and if everyone stays, and again, nobody will, not everyone will, but if they did, you're sitting around like 2025, if CJ Carr is the starting quarterback, you got Kenny Minchie over there. You might still have Steve Angeli. You got Deuce Knight over there. And then 2026, Noah Grubbs comes in. It's just a different world that we're living in at the quarterback position. This is not the same anymore, guys. Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie, 3 years ago, is a giant in the quarterback room. A giant. He's 6'2", 215 pounds, where the heck he is now. It's a different world we're living in, man. It is a different world. Quarterback recruiting is different. Not everybody's going to pan out. But I'll say this. In the hypothetical 2026 season, where you have Noah Grubbs, Deuce Knight, CJ Carr, and Kenny Minchie still on the roster. Again, hypothetical. Not all going to happen. But in that hypothetical world, you're looking around at nothing but talent. Which 6'4 guy do I like the best? That's going to be the conversation we're going to have. I know. CJ is only 6'3 or whatever, but like, still, 6'4 plus. Noah Grubbs is standing over there with a strong arm. Oh, there's a 6'5 quarterback from the state of Mississippi named Deuce Knight, who might be the best athlete we have ever had at the University of Notre Dame. Oh, there's CJ Carr, by the way, who might be the highest rated of them all. And we're not too far removed where Steve Angeli is one of your more talented quarterbacks on the roster. And if he stayed for 2025 or 2026, he's your least talented quarterback on the roster. Think about that. How far we have come in just a couple years, man. What is the most important position on the field in the game of football? It's quarterback. Here's another question. What is the most important position on the field in any sport? The answer is still quarterback. Yes, I talked about this already. There was deficiency on the roster when you're playing Alabama in 2020. There's no doubt. You had to be better at corner. You had to be better at safety. You had to be better finishers at defensive end. There were spots that you need to be better at. Wide receiver, you need to be better at. There's no doubt about that. But what is the elephant in the room? It was that quarterback wasn't good enough, man. It wasn't good enough. I'm tired. And this is fandom for a second. I'm tired of a quarterback being good enough to win 9 games. Oh, he's good enough to win 9 games with. Who cares? Who cares? Because you just put a cap on your ceiling. I want a kid that is good enough to win a championship. I want a kid that he wouldn't even dream of going 8-4, 9-3. Wouldn't even dream about it because he's that good, man. I want the difference. Different at the quarterback position is going to be one thing that separates this team from being a good program, a great program, and an elite championship level program. It's going to be the quarterback position. Yes, you need wide receivers. Yes, you need offensive play calling. Yes, you need all those things, guys, but you can't do it without the quarterback. Can't do it. Can't do it. You need it. You need it. Deuce Knight is different. Something that CJ is different. Maybe. I think CJ's very good. We'll see if he's different. I think Deuce is different, though. I do. I am excited to see how this quarterback room shakes out over the next few years. Because for the first time in a long time, from an entirety of a quarterback room, not one player, but an entirety of a quarterback room, I look at Notre Dame's quarterback future and I say, it's not going to be because of talent. But I could look at Drew Pine. Again, all due respect to Drew. I don't have any issue with Drew Pine. But I looked at a Drew Pine-led offense, and I knew that it could only get this good. That's it. That's a cap. There is a cap. We lived too long as a Notre Dame fandom. We have been living way too long as a Notre Dame fan base with a cap on how good an offense could be. Or a cap on how good a team could be. I'm tired of that, man. I'm tired. Quarterback position is maybe the number one thing that I look at, the biggest difference in Marcus Freeman's tenure so far, quarterback recruiting has been astronomically better. Like, it has been so much better. It's almost unbelievable. Because negativity, right? Negativity. The pessimism is in me. Pessimist in me. Excuse me. There wasn't too long. Let me rephrase it. The pessimist in me, when they landed CJ Carr, was like, that's not supposed to happen. As a Notre Dame fan, I'm like, that's not supposed to happen. And then they landed Deuce Knight, a 6'5" kid with 4.5 speed, a 42-inch vert and a howitzer for an arm. And I'm like, bro, Notre Dame doesn't get kids like that. That's not allowed, is it? That's got to be in the rule book somewhere. Like, there's no way that Notre Dame could get a kid like that. No chance. And they follow that up. And yes, there was a quarterback or two that I probably would have preferred in 2026, all due respect to Noah Grubbs, but Noah Grubbs is still very good. And you follow that up after those two, it's like, dang, dude, dang. That I didn't know Notre Dame was allowed to do that. I didn't know they were allowed to stack good quarterbacks back to back to back. That's wild. Did not know that that was allowed. It's pretty wild to think about, man. But apparently it's allowed. Apparently it is allowed. Apparently Notre Dame's allowed to get good quarterbacks every single year. Apparently. Who would have thought? For the longest time, I was like, oh man, I didn't think Notre Dame was allowed to recruit big time quarterbacks, Sean Davis. I didn't know they were allowed to recruit big time quarterbacks. And apparently it's allowed that they're allowed to go back to back to back and get really good quarterbacks. Who would have thought?
It's amazing what you can do in Notre Dame if you're willing to put in the work, huh, Double R? It's amazing, crazy, right?
Sean, I was just saying, man, like, You got CJ Carr, and I was like, for a second, I'm like, wait, Notre Dame's not supposed to get a kid like that. They're not supposed to get a kid like that. And then they got Deuce Knight, and I'm like, they're definitely not supposed to get a kid like that. Like, definitely not. And then you get Noah Grubbs, too, where I'm just like, dude, I think I had been programmed for so long to just expect fine. That's fine. Solid and fine. Those were the words, right? Whether it's great or not great or somewhere in between, Marcus Freeman has completely upgraded the quarterback play at Notre Dame from a talent perspective. There's no Drew Pines in there anymore, Sean. There's no Tommy Reese's. There's no Brendan Clark's. There's no name other bad backup quarterback that you knew wasn't that good. It's just such a different world, man. It's different.
You know what's even crazier, Double R? What's that? They literally had their pick of the litter in 26. I mean, one could say it came down to them having their pick of the litter, and wherever they leaned, the dominoes failed after Noah Grubbs decided to choose Notre Dame and commit to Notre Dame. And we saw dominoes falling in. So that just shows you how far the quarterback position and quarterback recruiting has come, right? Whereas Notre Dame is not picking up scraps. They are actually determining the market and how the dominoes fall in a recruiting cycle. That's amazing.
And Sean, my last point to illustrate the quarterback depth is that you have now strengthened the quarterback room so far that Tyler Buchner wanted to come back, and you're like, you have to play wide receiver, bro. You're not coming to play quarterback. I mean, that speaks to it, man. I mean, we can kind of like, oh, that's funny, but like, actually, you don't need Tyler Buchner to come play quarterback. A once heralded talented quarterback that also was just at Alabama, and I know he didn't play well in his one game at Alabama of real action. But regardless, we're talking about a former top 50 overall recruit, Sean, that didn't pan out. And you're like, you have to go play wide receiver, man. Our quarterbacks are good. Like, we don't need quarterback anymore. We don't need it.
That's amazing. But it just speaks to also that story is almost like bookings, right? Because Tyler Buchner coming back, right? Yeah. To go play lacrosse, win national championship, but then to want to be part of the football program. You know, that kid has to be one of the most humble kids you've ever met, right? I don't know if I would have taken to that. I mean, you have to be a special kid, like, after failing at a position to come back to the original school in a different sport and then come back and ask to be part of the team. That's a booking, because it speaks to how much he respects the leadership in the program, but then it's also a reflection of who he is as a young man and a person. That's absolutely fantastic. So I look at that from two different point of views, man. That story, I think if he scores a touchdown as a wide receiver, let's just say, somehow, even if it's in mop-up duty, that stadium is going to go bananas double R. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it is.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just a great place to be with. Again, to recap it, the positives to what Marcus Freeman has done, okay? The positives. Big presence in Texas, getting longer and more athletic everywhere. You have become more consistent in your approach in the Southeast. And quarterback recruiting. Those are the biggest things. Now, Sean, let's talk about the negatives, man. So we got to do it. Got to do the negatives, okay? I think there has been some evaluation issues at two different positions over the last couple of years. I think there's evaluation problem, okay? Let's break it down to two. Because one is not directly a Notre Dame coach's fault. And maybe we should go that way. Let's go that way first. Wide receiver, okay? Wide receiver. I literally wrote, this is what I wrote in the article, Sean, that's going to be live here, okay? The wide receiver recruiting issue isn't as much about Mike Brown, more about the hand he was dealt. It's unclear, but Notre Dame opted to stop pursuing both Cooper Perry and Dalen McCutcheon very early on in the process, two of the more productive and high-floor pass catchers in the 2025 class. The staff also went silent on Texas pass catcher Taz Williams Jr. as well, despite him wanting to take a return visit to South Bend on his own dime. Okay, so that was a first paragraph I wrote, and I wanted to say it this way, Sean. I don't fully blame, actually, I don't blame much to Mike Brown on this one, okay? But I do think there has been a wide receiver, especially in 2025, I think there's been an evaluation issue, okay? Because I think there is a world that today you could be sitting with Cooper Perry in this class in a good spot with Dalen McCutcheon, and you could still be recruiting Derek Meadows and Tanu Kynes and all those other guys, right? For whatever reason, Notre Dame became very selective early on in this wide receiver recruiting process, despite not being in the best position with a few guys, and they decided to opt out of a couple of the better, more consistent, polished pass catchers in this class. There has been an evaluation process, I believe, right now, Sean, because now, due to the Chancey Stuckey issue, Notre Dame is now in a position where you almost have to hit an inside straight on wide receiver recruiting down the stretch. Like, you got to do everything right with Derek Meadows. You have to do a lot right with Dylan Robinson. You have to do a lot right with Tanu Kynes. You can get done. And again, I think that there's a possibility that you can get two out of three in that class. But there was a major wide receiver evaluation issue, I believe, in 2025, which has been very, very frustrating to me.
And it's interesting to see how you just pointed out where things stood months ago and where things stand now, the possibilities if they had stayed on Perry and McCutcheon. And now, you know, let's specifically talk about Meadows. Could it be that they moved on from guys because they fell in love with Derek Meadows and his upside, even without the production? Because that's what you talked about with Cooper Perry and McCutcheon. Two guys that were highly productive. You see it on film. You see it on tape. And so you feel confident in that. And maybe they went away from that because they really truly fell in love with the upside of one Derek Meadows. And that's a possibility. But like you said, I also question whether or not they looked at the board and they felt like they did not, as a staff, want to come into redundancy, because redundancy was a problem last year. I don't know how they look at the film. I don't think looking at the film, I'm sure you don't think looking at the film, that would have been an issue if they had stayed on Cooper Perry and McCutcheon. But somehow, some way, the evaluation seems to have come down like that, and they immediately switched to, it was so late in the game, and Mike Brown comes in, and maybe he doesn't have as great a relationship with those young men. So maybe he says, I have a relationship with these guys. Right now, he switches gears to guys that he feels pretty confident I know I can get these guys, and then the guys that I'm going to work on, I'll continue to work on. And maybe he just really fell in love with Tanuk. Maybe he really fell in love with Derek Meadows. And that's when you have to trust the evaluation, right? Because evaluation is always, you know, iffy, right? We can fall in love with kids, and then for whatever reason, they just don't work out. It could be a system problem, it could be just a school problem, it could be a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but for me, I just think you point out something that is very key. I think moving forward, there's nothing wrong with recruiting in quantity. I think the problem Notre Dame has had in the past is they didn't want to recruit quantity elite players at the position.
Right.
They wanted to focus in on maybe one or two guys. And if they went after a top guy, that was a rarity, in all honesty. Because most of the wide receivers, like Will Fuller, wasn't a top 50 wide receiver when they were recruiting him. I think the first time he came to visit, you know, his host was Malik. And I remember Malik saying he was like a three-star. He really didn't want to come. And it was his mom that had Malik talk to him. It was just that was the even during the times when Brian Kelly had elevated the program, the wide receiver position, man, just always seemed like an Achilles heel in a sense offensively. Never had a problem with running backs, never had a problem with offensive line. The quarterback position speaks for itself. That wide receiver position, along with the quarterback, really work hand in hand, right? So you expect the improvement in quarterback recruiting to immediately impact the wide receiver. I question this. If Chancey Stuckey had stayed in place, what would have been coming off the class he had in 24, which had created immense momentum, even though there was some redundancy in the class? You still have momentum, especially in the state of Texas, right? How much momentum would they have had to lock up a Tanu Hines earlier, or to be even in a better position with a Tanu Hines, another kid from Texas? It's very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, I think that's the most frustrating aspect of it is that, I mean, you talk about 2023, Notre Dame was able to get Jaden Greathouse and Braylon James and Rico Flores and KK Smith, despite the fact that they didn't have a quarterback until very late in the process with Kenny Minchie. But 2024, you got CJ Carr, who was a big-time quarterback, and lo and behold, you got Cam Williams and Micah Gilbert and Logan Saldata. You're like, that's what a wide receiver class should look like. I think my biggest frustration, Sean, is that Deuce Knight, the big talent that he is and the personality that he has, how were you not able to recruit wide receiver better for Deuce Knight, man? I just don't know. I know how. Because of the Chancey Stuckey stuff and the transition and blah, 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 blah. But it just, you should not be in the situation you are now where things are, they're not dire. They're not in a situation where it's like doom and gloom, but you are in a situation where you need to do well down the stretch in order to get a semblance of a good wide receiver class. I did want to spend the majority of the time though, Sean, and we'll end it on this subject here. Okay. Talk about bad evaluations. Okay. Everybody has frustration with this one. Defensive line evaluation has been an issue. And it's not just been an issue in 2025. It's been an issue for a couple years now, for being honest with ourselves, okay? He has gotten a commitment, Matt, by the way. Elijah Burris and Jerome Bettis Jr. were both not committed to Mike Brown when he was there, right? I think they were both after that. So, yes, he's gotten two commitments in the class. But here's Sean, evaluation problem, okay? So some things I wrote. Al Washington has gotten a couple really nice victories, okay? A couple of really nice victories over the last couple of years. They had Boubacar Traore in the 2023 class, which I think was a big victory. 2024, you got Bryce Young. I know you obviously had an inside track on that one, but you still got Bryce Young. You also got Logan Thomas, which I thought was a nice get. You also got Christopher Burgess in 2025. That's dope, man. Good job. Really good stuff. But Sean, was also a lot of troubling, okay? I wrote in this piece that I don't blame Al Washington for Keon Keeley. I do not blame him at all for Keon Keeley. I just think that was going to happen. I just think it was going to happen, unfortunately. It was a state of the program stuff. It wasn't a state of Al Washington. So Keon Keeley happens, whatever. After that, though, Sean, I think there were a couple missteps. And missteps, not only in the evaluation, because I'll get to the evaluation. I think there were missteps as far as making decisions without solid plans in place. And what I mean by that is 2024, you basically force Owen Wafel out of the class. Okay, you force Owen Wafel out of the class to make room for Justin Scott. Well, Sean, that sounds great in theory, right? Because Justin Scott is a more talented player than Owen Wafel. But when you force a kid out that's good and you don't get the player you want, that ends up being a pretty bad decision, right? Because then you can't, then you don't get Justin Scott, okay? That's one. The next one, CJ May, in a similar situation this year of not quite to the degree, but CJ May wanted to take some visits and do whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they basically said, like, we're not going to recruit you anymore. So they basically forced CJ May out of the class. Sean, again, it's fine if you have a good plan in place. Okay. What was the plan? Who was next? In my opinion, based upon what I'm looking on the outside looking in, I think that they went from CJ May, couldn't find anything, my read at least, and then they said, Dominic Kulak, you're our Viper now, which I think will actually end up being fine. I think it's going to be a similar situation to the Boubacar Traore thing. And so you didn't get a Viper in 2023, but you got Boubacar, who eventually turned himself into a Viper, right? So I think you lucked out there. I think you might like out with Dominic Kulak, but I do not think that Dominic Kulak was initially thought of as the Viper in this class. He was a linebacker hybrid money backer, or whatever the heck they call it, right? Like, he was not supposed to be that guy. He became that guy as a default, in my opinion. Okay. Now, after that, Sean, here's where the evaluation stuff comes in. Okay, so you don't have a Viper in the class, a true one. Notre Dame decides, we're not going to recruit Marco Jones as a Viper. All 6'5", 240 pounds of explosive quick twitch muscle. Like, yeah, no, we don't need you, Marco. Cool. Whatever. He's at Texas A&M now. Great player, by the way. Really good player. And then, Sean, we didn't talk about this one. Actually, we have talked about this one, but not recently. Jarquez Carter was a kid that had high interest in Notre Dame. High interest in Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame had a chance. They just decided to stop recruiting him for whatever reason. They stopped recruiting Jarquez Carter. You decided to just cool on Malachi Williams. Whatever. That was just a decision I didn't love at the time. You decided to cool on him. Jalen Wiggins, you weren't able to get a traction with him in the 2025 class. Bryce Davis, I don't think that Notre Dame would have got Bryce Davis out of North Carolina, but they just kind of gave up. They were just like, okay, we're not going to try to get you on campus anymore. Like, we just kind of stopped. And then Javion Campbell's another one, Sean, where I'm just like, I think Notre Dame could have, am I saying that Notre Dame would have got Javion Campbell in the end? Not necessarily. But what I am saying is that Notre Dame would have pushed from the beginning of finding Javion Campbell and offering him. I think they would have had at least a chance in the end. So from Jarquez Carter, Marco Jones, Javion Campbell, Malachi Williams, there's just been a lot of things that I look at, Sean, and not having a replacement option plan in effect. And there's just a lot here, man, that I'm just like, I don't really understand the process here. The process just seems kind of flawed and shoddy to me.
It's flawed and shoddy because, honestly, you depend on the results you have. You have results from a defensive line with two guys that are all Americans, first, second team, depending upon the magazine or the publication, then their promise for the NFL draft. You feel like you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
But you have to realize.
Marquise Lightfoot, too, Sean. I forgot to mention that. Someone put that in the chat. They decided not to pursue Marquise Lightfoot. Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. So you think about that, and then you point to the fact that maybe that is the direction. That is what you're leaning on. But you can't lean on them because you didn't evaluate them and you didn't recruit them. That's not you, right? So when you're talking to recruits, you have to be able to show them that this is where the rubber is going to meet the road over the next two seasons with what you're talking about in the evaluation issue. Because now these are the guys that you evaluated and recruited. Hey, what's going to come of this? Right? Hey, Boubacar Traore could turn out to be a 9-10 sack guy. And all of a sudden, he's on the radar of the NFL. I hope that happens. But that doesn't mean that you don't take the opportunity to go after big-time talent at the position. And like you said, you're looking for a plan. You're trying to figure out what's the direction here, right? Because you see direction when you get a guy like Owen Wakeford and a guy like CJ May, but then you retreat. And you don't have a backup plan for the reason you retreat. No one had a problem with you retreating from Owen Wakeful because they knew what you expected to replace him with. But you better make darn sure where you sit with that individual before you make that decision. And you better make darn sure that you're like 70-80% sure that he's coming to your school before you lose a young man like that to Michigan. So that, for me, along with what you just said, is the biggest issue concerning defensive line recruiting. Where are we going? It's nice to get a Sean Siviliano. It's nice to have a Davion Dixon, one guy per class, one big guy that can feel the need, two kids from the state of Florida. But where is the quality depth? Where is that coming from?
Right.
Where is it coming from? And I will say this. Notre Dame, is it fair to say Notre Dame can be viewed as a developmental school along the defensive line over the last 10 years with what they have been able to do? They were getting kids in 210, 215 pounds. Next thing you know, they're in the NFL 4 years later. And I think under the previous regime, they showed the ability. Now that we know the recruiting aspect, they didn't put in the work. I'm not saying that the previous defensive line coach didn't put in the work, but I think they weren't willing to go after the big guys and work hard enough to get them. But yet still, they fully bought into development. And maybe, I don't know, because we're not part of the coaching conversation, but maybe Brian Smith told us last week. What did Brian Smith tell us last week? At big-time defensive tackles, hey, this is what it's going to take to get in the door, right?
Yeah.
So have they made the decision to take a step back at that decision and truly go developmental, maybe get in on, you know, some private school kids that they feel like they have a good shot at? I mean, I would be very interested in seeing what the overall plan is, but it seems like from the outside looking in, we can't definitively say what that is.
Well, I mean, that's the frustrating part, Sean. It's like, look, man, obviously you want results in the end, but you also want a solid process all the way through to get to those results, because that's replicable. If you don't have one, then that's not sustainable, right? I mean, that's where my frustration literally comes from, is that it's not that you chose to go a different route than Owen Wavell. It's not that you went with CJ May, because we have also seen Notre Dame over the last couple of years go a different route. And the route works, right? Like, I know that he ended up the admissions issue with Brandon Hillman, Sean, but like, Notre Dame had a plan with Brandon Hillman to basically take Peyton Bowen's spot at that point, right? Like, that plan was there. What happened at wide receiver when, what was the kid from Georgia that is playing at Georgia Tech now, the tall receiver? What is that kid's name? You know what I'm talking about?
The one with the weird story with his mom.
Isaiah Canyon. Yeah. So Isaiah Canyon decommits, Sean, or he's decommit. Notre Dame already knew who their next wide receiver was going to be. They already had Lucas Aldate ready. They were ready for it. You know, they had their next step. Notre Dame, on defensive line, there's too many steps where I just don't understand why this is the process or what the next step is. That's where the frustration lies. And I think that it needs to be a better process, more consistent process. That's my biggest thing here. Because I actually believe, personally, just from what I've seen so far, I don't think Al Washington's a bad coach at all, just from a strictly on-field developmental perspective. Everybody from year one to year two got better this past year. They were better in 2023 than they were in 2022, easily, right? But it's about, recruiting is a part of the game, right? And that's my frustration too, is that I also don't think that Coach Washington is a bad recruiter. I actually think that he connects with kids pretty well. It's the process I think is flawed. It's the lack of focus. It's just so strange to kind of pinpoint exactly what the issue is, but there's an issue there. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. There is an issue there. Hopefully it gets better. Folks,
would you say the defensive tackle position in recruiting is a headache position? It's a headache position.
That would probably be my least favorite position from my experience to recruit, because I think the demand is so much. Sean, I would even say like the portal, the spring portal we saw with like Jermaine Lole and Demonic Williams from TCU and like some of these other guys transferring. I will tell you this flat up, the compensation for these players that we were being told what the movement numbers is not equal to the level of play on the field, man. Like, for whatever reason, every school needs to pay quite a bit for some of these players. There's no doubt. It is a very, very struggling position, to say the least.
Yeah. And I wonder whether or not, you know, the headache is worth it to Notre Dame at that position. You know, Yo, you can't avoid the quarterback position. You can't avoid the wide receiver position. But outside of those two positions, look, we just watched a Chiefs team win the Super Bowl, basically having a worse roster than the 49ers, but the best two players at quarterback and defensive tackle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And they both made game changing.
Yes.
So the position, I just need a direction, man. I need to understand where it sits in priority, that position, because it should be high priority the way the game is going. You know, yes. With the passing game, you have to be able to push that pocket from inside, right? That's why the defense is so effective, because of Riley Mills and Howard Cross.
Yeah.
And how they develop and gotten better. That makes everybody else better. That's going to make Drake Bowen's job. So it's definitely going to make it a little bit easier as a first time start.
Well, and they're a great sample too, Sean, because obviously he did not recruit those players. Those players were already there. Mills and Cross were there. But I would say this, the evidence that he, because I've heard people say this a decent amount on the board and on this channel, and I actually disagree with it a lot, is that people say, oh, yeah, well, Mike Elston laid the groundwork and they developed him. Like, guys, Howard Cross was a strictly rotational player before Coach Washington came. To not give Al Washington any credit for Howard Cross is very misguided, in my opinion. Riley Mills was better with Al Washington than he was without Al Washington. So we have to give him some credit of he did good with it, right? So, yeah. But I think that there's a balance we need to have of being critical of a person, but also say, like, he has done some good things. It's just the recruiting process that has been a struggle for me to accept as a player.
Yeah. I just think it's one of those positions, because of what you said, it is a headache to always consistently have to have NIL conversations, deal with NIL conversations. It has to be uncomfortable just not being able to recruit a kid, right?
Yeah.
Just recruit a kid, right? Imagine Geno and the impact he had in his meetings with Deuce. I'm sure those are NIL conversations, but because of the position and the person that Deuce is, I don't think it had to be ongoing, right? That defensive tackle, dude, you just had defensive lineman decommit from Georgia, commit to USC, decommit from USC, now projected to go back to Georgia. It's like, what are we doing, right? And then the Damian Shepard situation. Like
that was the most obvious decommitment of all time, by the way. You're talking about Justice Terry.
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. And then you talk about Damian Shanklin, and you pointed out that Notre Dame was kind of used as a placeholder until the SEC schools came around.
Yeah, Ohio State and the SEC until they came around.
And that, unfortunately, is, you know, evaluation once again. You have to know not only the player, but you have to know where you stand with the player. That's part of evaluation as well.
Yeah. I mean, because they basically went all in on Damian Shanklin, which I get, because Damian Shanklin's a really talented football player, but reading the room of like, hey, man, we're kind of his leader for like a couple months here, and he doesn't want to commit to us. You know what I mean? Like there is a reading in the room that definitely needs to happen. Folks, want to get a couple of these super chats though, and then we're going to get out of here. Again, our last show together here on the Notre Dame Recruiting Hour and the Irish Breakdown Podcast. I believe the show will live on. I'm sure Sean and some other people will be kind of taking it up after this, but my last show, I should say, on the Notre Dame Recruiting Hour. So we had a couple of super chats from Christopher Hardy. Christopher, thank you so much. She said, thank you, Ryan, for all your hard work on the recruiting beat and breaking things down for IAB Nation. Absolutely, sir. And thank you so much for the super chat. It's very appreciated. We also had Pete Weber with a similar one, Sean. Thank you, Pete. Really appreciate you, man. So big thanks to Ryan for all the years of great analysis and coverage. I think I speak for all of us when I say we appreciate all the hard work. You've made IB a special place and will be missed. Thank you, sir. Very, very much appreciated. Just had another one come in. Thank you, Irish4Life99. Thank you so much for Super Chats. Thank you, Ryan, for being a part of our IB family. May you continue your success in your professional and personal career. Thank you all so much. Hey, real quick before we get out of here, I just want to let y'all know I appreciate every one of you. Truly do. This has been a great ride. This is not necessarily the end of the ride. I have some cool things locked up, and I know Sean already obviously knows about the news. I will be sharing it on Twitter, and I'll throw it on the message board as well on July 15th. That is when I am allowed to let it out there, or the announcement to kind of be out there in the universe. But again, I want to thank everybody for this channel so much. We just had another super chat as well from Andy Melton fans. Says, thank you, Ryan, for all the good work. Thank you so much, sir. Very much appreciate you, Nathan. I'm not going anywhere. Like I said, folks, I'll still be on the post-game shows for the most part this year. I might even be covering a game 4 Irish breakdown. I might be up in the Meadowlands for the Navy game as well. So not fully rid of me yet, but on a full-time everyday basis. Yes, this will be the last one. Want to thank everybody again, but I also want to thank Sean Davis, of course. Sean, it's been fun, my friend. I know this isn't over. The relationship continues, sir, but thank you so much for everything that you've done as well for the show.
I think life is an amazing thing that happens. Circumstance can bring someone to your life, and the purpose that they're brought into your life, which is work-related, all of a sudden blossoms to something a little bit different and bigger. And I think either one of us thought, and just the relationship of having girls, and just talking about that, me giving you down the road, you know, this is what to expect because you're at the beginning. It has truly been something I greatly appreciate. And I remember you told me the news. I was like, oh, this is absolutely amazing. Because no one deserves it more than you. No one deserves the entire blessing more than you and your family. So, once again, brother, brothers for life. Man, I'm sure we're going to be having you back in an hour as a guest sometime in the future to talk about some kids. So I'm excited. You're not getting rid of us that easy, Irish fans. You'll see us on the screen together.
Well, the next time I'm on this show, though, Sean, you're going to have to tell me what's going on in the landscape of Notre Dame football. So that's going to be a little bit different of a vibe, my friend.
It definitely will be film analysis, probably.
Yeah. We had Jeremiah Huggins with a super chat. Thank you so much, Jeremiah. We appreciate you guys. We are about to sign off here for the last time on the Notre Dame Recruiting Hour. Appreciate y'all, man. Make sure you hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit that notification bell if you listen to us on your favorite podcast platform and you enjoyed even an ounce of the content that we were able to provide to you, or I've been able to provide for you especially. Please leave a nice review on there. Subscribe to the podcast. Boarsoutersrankdown.com. We'll be on there as well. I'm missing. There's like a
Ryan
many hitting points, man. Yes. I will be on Ivy Nation Sports Talk this week, tomorrow for the last time, and then I'll be on the mailbag most likely for the last time as well. Thank you all. Peace out. Talk to you again soon. Maybe not on the Irish Breakdown podcast, but the next venture will come up very soon. Thank you all. Have a great day. Signing out here on the Notre Dame Recruiting Hour.